At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Steve Staley, Chief Executive Officer of Upland Resources, UPL. It's a ticker there. And Steve provides a corporate update on their portfolio of upstream assets. Also on the podcast, I have Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources, BZT, ticker there. And Colin talks about their copper gold projects, including their option to acquire a 50% interest in the Buffalo Copper Gold Project in Zambia. And as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk, and you can also see a wealth of other content. There's stuff from Malky there, there's stuff from the SP Angel on China punishing officials for Green Shield failures. There's also a little article about AI, artificial intelligence. So that's at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Steve Staley, Chief Executive Officer of Upland Resources. UPL is the ticker there. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Oh, great to be here. Nice to speak to you again, Justin.
Yeah, and you've got a bit of positive corporate update on all parts of the business. A big update on Tunisia and positive move on Sarawak and a nice little move in the UK as well. We'll get into these in a bit, Steve. Before we do, as always, if someone's listening who's not quite familiar with the story, could you just summarise what Upland's all about, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are a standard listed company. So we're on the main market of the London Stock Exchange. We're an oil and gas E&P company, exploration and production. We've been listed since 2015. Assets in the UK, onshore and offshore, in Tunisia, and also looking very closely at looking to add some in Malaysia, in the Far East. So we're very active, and we're great to be back on speaking to you again, Justin.
Yes, so let's go to the first point of the RNS, the release today. You talk about Tunisia, and you've got quite a bit of acreage out there, and you've had some positive moves and sounds from potential farmers. Take us through the detail here, Steve, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, just to remind investors of what we have in Tunisia, this is the SOAF permit onshore Tunisia, slightly more than 4,000 square kilometres. So that's a big area. It contains an existing discovery called Dekrila and a lot of potential. Approximately 2 trillion cubic feet of recoverable gas potential. That's a lot, plus some oil potential as well. So it sits in an area just south of Tunis, which is well served with pipelines. So we've got a big gas pipeline, the big one that goes across to Europe, and smaller local ones. So very well placed. And we are obviously working on that. But at the same time, we have been talking, as one does, to the State Oil and Gas Company, who are our partners in this particular permit. And they've asked us to look at some specific producing onshore fields in Tunisia with a view to going in and investing and helping out. So that's great. It's great. We've got a good relationship with ATAP, the state oil company. And at the same time, we're also looking at, beyond that, other fields in the area where there may be a chance for a very good, mutually beneficial working arrangement.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's next year? I mean, you've got, you know, the recoverable estimates here in the table on the RNS, and it stacks up very well. But what's the next, you know, physical thing you'll be doing in Tunisia then to advance this, Steve?
Well, there'll be a couple of things happening in parallel on Sawaf. So the permit we have, that needs 2D seismic. Initially, about 300 kilometres, because it's underexplored. There's a heck of a lot of potential there. So we'll be progressing towards that, but at the same time, we will be looking at these producing fields, which are obviously much more advanced in their development because they are in production. And we will be negotiating, talking to the permit holders for those. So, very active period ahead in Tunisia.
Yeah, absolutely. And you say there, I mean, there's been people sort of talking to you about these permits already, which is, like I say, validates, you know, the potential here, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the other side of what's going on in Tunisia for us, is that on Sawaf, we already have had approaches from several oil companies who are interested to farm in, you know, subject to them doing their full due diligence on what we've got on this high potential acreage. So that's a nice validation, a nice tick in the box for our work.
Yeah. So you've got decent acreage there. People are asking about it, you know, showing their interest, and you've got Tunisian sort of oil and gas company asking you to farm into other potential areas as well. So they obviously like working with you, Steve.
Well, one hopes so. You know, we like working with them, and it's a good working relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move to Sarawak. I know, you know, potential, investors, I know, are quite excited about this, because if anyone knows about Sarawak or doesn't, I mean, it's neighbouring Brunei, obviously one of the richest guys in the world, made his money through oil and gas, so massive reserves there. So what's happening at Sarawak at the moment, Steve?
Oh, yeah, things are moving on well. I'm conscious, you know, we've been quite quiet over the last few weeks. The reason for that is we've been very busy. We've had a number of meetings with Petronas, Petros, which is the Sarawakian regional state oil company, and also with our partners, Brook, a dockyard. And things are moving well on the Sarawakian opportunities that we've already talked about in the past. But also, we're seeing a number of other opportunities come out of these meetings. And the broader area in Malaysia as a whole, and Petronas have spoken to us about looking at some of the other opportunities that they're able to offer to us. So it's, yes, very interesting, and a lot of work to do again over there.
Yeah. And do you find, I mean, is it quite slow working with, I mean, with any big companies, it's hard because obviously they've got so much things going on, but would you like to move faster or just, you know, this is the way it is and you just take it as that?
Well, I think I'd probably speak for all small oil companies when I say that we'd always want things to move faster. I mean, whether you're dealing with a large, private sector oil company or with a state oil company, they do tend to move more slowly than companies of our size. And, you know, and that's often down to the fact that they do have to move through committees for approvals for things, for example, or simply that they are, as you say, doing so many other things. Yeah. So there is always that constant tension with small oil companies and larger oil companies in terms of speed. Yes.
Yeah. And this is quite exciting. Take us through the developments happening here in the UK and the North Sea.
Yes, I mean, we have alluded to this in the past, mm-hmm. But we made an application in what's called the UK 31st offshore licensing round, which closed in November last year with partners, for a swathe of acreage in the UK North Sea. And we should be finding out the result of that application. It's a competitive bid this quarter, quite possibly next month in May. And we're watching with bated breath on that, and when we can say some more, when, you know, if and when we are awarded it, we will be saying a lot more about it. But we would be there as a 40% interest holder on a, you know, a ground floor basis, on an equal basis with our partner companies in that. So, and I think it's very exciting acreage, highly prospective.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, what is the state of play of the North Sea at the moment? I mean, and what attracted you to this?
Well, this is an opportunity in this particular case to get in to an exclusive position on this acreage without a large work commitment. So, that's always attractive. It's an area of the world that ourselves and our partners know well. So, we feel that we can spot value there. And although the North Sea is a mature area, I think by anybody's measure, there is still a lot of opportunity there, as you've seen from recent activity.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you just look at the mechanics of this. When you actually apply for this, how much information do you get then? What data do you get that allows you to think, okay, that's a good that's prospective? What takes you forward on that?
Well, the UK runs a system where a lot of the data goes into the public domain. The seismic data goes into the public domain quite quickly relative to most of the world. So, you can readily access that. And plus, of course, here there's a pool of people who've worked the North Sea over many years. And so there's a lot of experience and knowledge available that perhaps isn't the case in other parts of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, good stuff, Steve. If someone's listening to this right now and likes the sound of the story, but are not yet following you on Vox, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay. Well, I'll give them three sort of project-specific reasons. First is in Tunisia, Sawaf, this permit. Yeah, very large potential, mainly gas, nearly 2 TCF. That is big for any company. For a company of our size, it's stellar. So that's exploration and some appraisal, but a lot of potential to go for there. The second would be in Malaysia, where we are looking at multiple opportunities now, and some of them very well advanced. And I would lump in also was my second point there. Sorry about that, Justin. Also the North Sea, where we're seeing the potential very soon to see if we've got an award of a new area there, which will be exciting. Mm-hmm. Third point is we're now looking at some producing assets. And if we can find the right deal, we will move that forward. And that will give us obviously a revenue stream if we are successful in farming into one of those. So exciting times for the company. And a lot happening.
Marvellous stuff. Steve, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, I'm sure we'll.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources. BZT is the ticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, thanks for inviting me.
Now, the company has grown, by the looks of it, it's growing. Of course, some people won't know what it's all about, but for people not familiar with Bezant, can you just summarise what it's about, Colin?
Well, Bezant is a company which is totally focused on copper and gold. It's got its main project in the Philippines, which is known as Mankayan. The board really have spent the last year seeking what I would call above average copper gold projects in various provinces where elephants have been found before, and it's a good place to be gold looking again. So simply speaking, it's a totally focused copper gold company with the emphasis, I think, on copper, gold and gold byproducts.
Yeah, okay. So the first question really is, I mean, you've got a bit of a monster in the Philippines, a monster project there, copper gold, Mankayan, and so what's happened there? Why have you moved away from that and gone to Zambia?
Well, we haven't moved away from it. Mankayan is arguably one of the best developing projects in the world. Mm-hmm. It's fully defined, drilled out, it's technically understood. It was technically understood when I came in a year and a half or so ago, but it's better technically understood now. We've done lots of scenarios and to decide what is the NPV, what's the appropriate mining rate, what's the appropriate mining method. And so we fully understand it, and we made sure the market fully understands it, which is more important. And we've demonstrated that it's anywhere between $600 and $1 billion project. But, out there, people are saying, oh, it's underground, so it's no good, he can't compete with a lot of projects. In reality, the mining method is a block cave, which is almost, under, you know, how can I best describe it? I guess you'd describe it as underground quarrying. You really are drilled to blast. The ore body will be delivered to you. You haven't got miles and miles of lateral development and difficult ventilation issues. And it compares, just about compares well with open pit mining. So, you know, I take this opportunity in this interview to say, don't be afraid of the fact that it's underground, because quite frankly, it's somewhat, when you talk about when you've got the environmentalists all over you, as we have nowadays, it's an advantage to be out of sight. Yeah. You're never out of mind, but you're certainly out of sight. And really cheap method, mining method, around about $16 to $17 direct cost all up. And so now what we've done, we've put this on everybody's radar screen, but we know there's been a level of disappointment around on the copper price. That's something Byzant can't control. Mm-hmm. And there's been a level of disappointment regionally. That's something Byzant can't control. Mm-hmm. So presence, we make sure we're there regularly. The government understand us, have sympathy with our project and the way it's going, and recognise what a contributor that it could in actual fact be to the Philippines economy. So all of those things aren't fast-track, Justin. They're not fast-track. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't make announcements every 5 minutes saying you've talked to this company, that company. You just get on with it. So Mankind is Mankind, and well understood. The market knows it a damn sight better than it did a year ago. There's quite a bit of an interest around the project. And better copper times and a bit of regional development and support of mining, and I think you'll see Mankind moving forward very rapidly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it's progressing behind the scenes, and like you say, you can't announce everything you do. So let's move on to this.
That's a very good way of saying it, and thank you very much for that. You can't announce everything you do. First of all, it would be boring to say you've had this meeting, that meeting with this person. But secondly, the industry is not too happy about it. You know, it's a very close, keep your cards close to your chest type of business. And when you're talking about projects as large as Mankind, nobody wants them. But in reality, everybody wants them. And it really is a game changer. Somebody's got to make the first move. And when they do, that's when the fireworks start. Not news releases every 5 minutes, sadly.
Yeah, and I suppose sentiment changes as copper price rises, doesn't it? You know, everyone knows where copper's going in the future, you know, pretty much. And but at the moment, it's like I say, it's in a bit of a lull. So I suppose sentiment changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's not much argument about that one, Justine. You know that, if one forecasts the 2030, we've got to double the amount of copper. I mean, it's that prediction. And it's a fairly consistent prediction by the chartist. But if that's half right, I, for one, don't know how they're going to do it. You know, you're talking about a new Escondida every year. Mm-hmm. These mines are bigger, bigger and bigger. They take 8 to 10 years to develop. And that makes 2030 tomorrow. So... And the mining companies, you know, it's fine. You know, the 2008, they all fell to bits. They all cut the cost. They all then basically enjoyed a pretty lean and mean mining situation, 2014, 15, 13, announced great profits and nice dividends. And now the analysts are saying, are your results sustainable? Where's your tomorrow's copper? And if you look through most of the senior copper producers and look at their inventory, not too impressive. Not too impressive. They've got to go out and buy. And of course, again, that's been a tendency. You know, these major mining companies, they haven't got exploration departments any longer. And so they'd sooner let the projects that don't make it fail on the public markets, and then they would sooner buy success and pay a premium for it. My belief is that Mankind sits on the success side of the equation. Mm. Nice project, well understood, well drilled, technically sound, can be tested over a range of scenarios, producing good IRRs and good NPVs. So putting Mankind in its place, great project, big project. The market knows it a lot better than they did a year ago. And I'm optimistic, as you say, there'll be a direct correlation between improving copper prices and the interest in Mankind. And I for one, I'm expecting the copper price to stay at about, you know, not stay at, but over the year average about $6,800. So yeah. I'm bullish. And of course, every year it stays around about 6,800. Puts tremendous pressure on it going to 7,375, 7,77 in 2020-2021. So it's a good metal to be in. We feel that we've considered it well. And again, that's what's taken us into Zambia.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, same theme, copper, gold, different jurisdiction. So tell us why you've gone for this option agreement for the Buffalo Copper Gold Project there in Zambia.
Well, Buffalo is... It's in the IOCG areas. I for one, have made much noise over the last few months about the IOCG areas and not comparing them with the main copper belt trends, because there is no comparison. They're generally in central Zambia. And I've often said in various gatherings and on various statements on various platforms that they really have taken second place, subordinated the IOCGs have, to the main copper belt. I mean, some of those mines started in 1920, 1930. And I read the other day that the Umkana, the Kitwit project, had got another 30 years of life, and it started in 1930. Would you believe it? So, you know, they didn't go looking outside the standard model. Before BHP was BHP, when Billiton, they did quite a lot of work in the 80s, early 80s, and they often, in news releases and joint venture releases, made reference to Olympic Dam, and that the mineralization was Olympic Dam type mineralization. And, you know, that led to some very big systems. And my belief is that there's a good chance of finding one of those systems. It won't be local to Buffalo. It will be a regional type event, which led to a buffalo and hopefully a few more buffaloes. And the situation we see is a big blow where the grades are very high. The copper is visible, malachite all over the place. And in this particular case, buffalo, we're actually seeing a very, very wide ore body, and we can project it for quite a distance. So what takes us to Zambia is a very good jurisdiction, a well-known mining jurisdiction, which has again been going forever. Good place to work, good mining infrastructure, the road systems not too bad, the main road systems very good, government are very supportive of us, and all of the mining companies there in Zambia. Not many minuses, and a deposit there, which, quite frankly, where do you start life off with the sort of grades that we're quoting, copper and gold? Where do you start life off with a major outcrop which you can project for a way? And where do you find that the model is well understood by others who had got a different model to what junior mining companies had, i.e. start drilling under the known outcrop, and you're going to produce much of the same. You might not produce much of the same, and we understand this model, and that really the major blows are not the place to start work. The major blows are to you know for small miners to enjoy early rewards, but what you're looking for here is big strikes, which we feel we've got, continuity and a system, iron ore, copper, iron oxide, copper, gold, which is kind of fairly well understood internationally, but not that well understood in Zambia and pursued in Zambia. So that's what takes us to Zambia. New model, not new model, a model not well pursued in the past. A model which has got potential for a huge find and discovery. Right metal, dominant copper, but with some gold attached. Not gold, and of course, gold won't be attached all over the place. That's the interest of these types of deposits. But where you get the gold, again, it's a pointer to you're in the right spot, and you should be exploring with your magnetics and your geochem as a probably offset to that blow. So we know what we've got to do. I don't think it's going to be the most expensive type of exploration for discovery either. You'll see that we've got a relatively low entry. The guys understand that we want to do our initial work before we dive into. You see it so often, Justin, you know, that people sign up for $3-5 million joint ventures. What happens? There's somebody disappointed one side of that equation. The junior who signs up for $3-5 million has difficulty raising it. If he doesn't get the results, the shareholders are very, you know, they're mad at them. Everybody's unhappy. But conversely, if you if the joint venture's too successful, the other side wish they'd never done it, and you're spending your life trying to stay in the joint venture. So we've got very sort of mature partners here who understand, well, look, go and see it. If you reckon you could make a big development of it, then let's partner. Then we've got the rules of partnership clearly defined. If it's and then they fully know that if it's as it is now, it's got small mining activities on it. If it remains as a small mining activity, then it's not something that Byzant would necessarily want to do. So they've given us that option, and to spend up to, by the way, it doesn't say spend 200. So I think it's a good position, a good option. We've got our chance to do quite a bit of work to decide what the potential is. And we've got a clear roadmap on how we might develop the project forward, explore the project forward, if we like what we see.
Yeah. So how much time do you have, and when are you starting here then, Colin?
We're starting, well, when I've had people here over the weekend. We've got various dates to produce what will be a scoping study. They're fairly aggressive dates. But at the same time, not to worry about that, because the outcrop sticks there. So what I'll be doing is basically getting back actors to look at just how far the strike is. I should be drilling short holes well in advance of these blows, because the blows are not necessary. You know, the dripping roast is not necessarily indicative of the overall situation. And so round about October, we should know exactly what we've got. And of course, I've had people out over the last few days, and we've been doing more initial sampling and the rest of it. So we should be giving the market some results in the not too distant future on crop extension, the type of grades one can expect, and one will see on surface, and then the opportunities for small scale mining I'm going to pursue, because it really is rich ore. It can be upgraded on site quite cheaply, and then transported and bought for quite good prices. So I'm rather hoping that we make our decision to exercise the option sooner than later, and get on with some real exploration. No, hopefully some intermediary mining in the short term, which can lead to cash flow, and what everybody's tired of in this marketplace of ours at the moment: placements. But of course, one can never guarantee that. But that's the overall objective.
Marvellous stuff. Colin, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of this project and Byzant, but are not following the story yet, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, you've got Mankayan, which is proved and probably one of the better projects in the world. You've got this situation, which I spent a long time on getting, and delighted that we've got huge potential. So that's two great copper projects, one proven, one certainly not greenfields, brownfields, and a market cap of £1 million. So basically, if this club is quite cheap to enter, and the opportunities are in relation to the market cap are tremendous. So entry price cheap, mm-hmm. well-developed project ready for either sale or development with partners. And new project, which is brownfields, showing tremendous potential at the outset. They're the three reasons why Byzant might be a good place to put your money.
Colin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I think we'll have a lot to tell you on this project, so thank you very much for your time and the opportunity. Thank you, Justin. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five: Xeros Technology, XSG. Of course, big final results coming out end of next week, or start of next week? No, start of next week, I think, yeah. At four, I also did a video on those recently. I covered a bit of news. At four, Powerhouse Energy, PHE. Another one I did a video on, because I had news up this week, up a little bit today at 0.5 pence, up just 1%. At 3, Tech Capital, up 81% as I'm looking right now. And I'll tell you why in a bit, because the news coming out. At 2, Nuformix, NFX. Again, I did a video on those, covering those over the weekend. 3.2 pence, up just 0.61%. And MX Oil is the most followed company today, up 47%. MXO is ticker there. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, it's Active Energy Group, coal switch site awarded $500,000 government grant. At 4, Tech Capital, Solaris secures first commercial order for their microsalt. And it's going in, it doesn't say who the customer is, but it's a food company in the US there, so a US snack producer, and it's expected to be dispatched in May. So very quick that to market there. Okay, at 2-3, sorry, Talao Energy, TR1 notification of major holdings. At 2, Totally PLC, Voke awarded new contract worth up to £13.5 million. And number one, of course, Steve Staley, Dr. Steve, on the podcast today. Upland Resources Corporate Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchus appreciatus.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.